Well, what I think you're pointing out when you say, when he says, I suppose you know, I suppose you can tell me where you'll find old Jimmy Nowlett. I mean, he's asking an obvious question, but the fact of the matter is that lying behind that question, there is a whole backlog of wishing for to be connected with a memory and a past. And so as you read this story, there's very few words on the page, and yet there's so much of a kind of a history in the background of the words. Yes, Michael?
I don't use slang like that anywhere else. Suppose, believe, like, without the E.
Do you use slang like that anywhere else? Well, that's a good question. Some writers, whether they're English, whether they're American, whether they're New Zealand, would use slang like that. And they're using the slang because they're trying to capture the person in the way that he speaks, in the way that he thinks. So what is the use of slang? What is the use of slang? Well, an answer to that is it captures the full reality of a person. I mean, people are the way they speak. The way you speak is the way you are. And if you speak with a lot of slang, then that colours you. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It colours you. It gives you a certain flavour. So the kind of language that a writer puts into the mouth of their character gives that character a certain kind of a flavour. That makes sense?
Yep.
Yep.
He's laid back. He can't be bothered saying the whole word.
He's laid back. He can't be bothered saying the whole word.
But sometimes the way someone speaks isn't just, like, especially when it comes to slang, like, you know, cutting words short and making it feel like, such as you wanna, you know, instead of you want to.
Yep.
You know, sometimes that's just the way they were brought up as well.
Of course, it's the way they've been taught their language. It's part of their background.
It's like y'all, y'all in America.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot of them were brought up to speak that way.
That's right.
And it's just in their bones.
It's in their bones. It's a flavour of who and what they are and where they come from. That's exactly right.
I use it when I'm messaging.
Yep. That's another...
I occasionally use it when I speak. Cut words short.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a shorthand. So let's go on to the next question. What does this story tell us about the experience of the stranger? So what do we learn indirectly about his experience? What do we learn indirectly? Now, when I say indirectly, what do I mean? What do we learn indirectly? Indirectly means that we're not told something directly.
Implied.
Implied. Yes, Thomas, what?
He grew up in the town.
He did grow up in the town.
But that's not put in there. But what, stating that he actually did grow up in the town.
So, for instance, when he says, did you, I suppose you knew Mary Wilde. Mary, said the grocer, that was my wife's maiden name. Would you like to see her? No, no, she mightn't remember me. He reached hastily for his swag and shouldered it. Now, there's a whole episode embedded in those 3.5 lines. Nothing is said about it other than a question is asked about, did you, I suppose you knew Mary Wilde. So what do we learn indirectly through that kind of exchange?
Probably her father,
maybe, that's a possibility.
It's the only character he doesn't want to know any more about. He's backing away at a million miles an hour, whereas everybody else is.
He doesn't want to know about that character. He wants to know about all these other people who've died, but he's backing away from that character.
No. It's the one person who's still alive.
It's one person who's still alive. Derek?
Well, he obviously had the hots for her and she probably didn't even notice it.
Yeah, had the hots for her. That's another interpretation.
And she didn't notice it.
And so she didn't notice it.
She only wanted a chance of meeting her and, you know, having an emotional you know, experience, and it's nothing for her.
So there's all these possibilities, but nothing is actually said or stated. And in a way, Henry Lawson is leaving it up to us readers to fill in the gaps. We can imagine
that
how
fear
we...
fear of disappointment and rejection.
He doesn't want disappointment or rejection, that's right. So that tells us something about his state of mind. His state of mind, insecure.
And he's coming back for Christmas.
Yep.
And all his friends are dead.
And all his friends are dead. So he's a pretty lonely kind of a fella.
He hasn't been there for 15 years.
That's right. So he's perhaps expecting too much.
Sounds like a drifter.
A drifter. Well, that's what the story's called. Drifted back.
Okay, I didn't pay this before.
He is a drifter.
It sounds like he's been a drover.
Does it?
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah. What's the difference between a drifter and a drover? Is there a difference? Yep, tell us the difference.
Well, I mean, I've had lots of experience. Drover's a person who wants to on the property and has a proper job. He
yep.
has an income and he has responsibilities.
Okay.
Drifter's someone who's, you know,
yep.
just goes from place to place and doesn't have a job.
One's got a job, one hasn't yet.
Yep, okay.
Back in when this was
written. He goes where the gold is.
Back when this was written, a drover drove cattle.
Yep.
And was in charge of making sure the cattle got to a certain place.
Yep.
So along stock routes and that sort of stuff, which is still there.
Yeah.
And you can still actually go along it.
Go along those stock routes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
drift. What's the drifter then? From that definition.
Has no destination.
No yeah. destination.
Just. Yeah, drifts in and out.
Drifts from place to place. Doesn't have a job. Doesn't have a responsibility.
Now, Lawson uses this drifter, however, to draw attention to some sort of themes about the Australian experience. I'm wondering what theme you can see in this paragraph on the second page with old Ben Hake. I meant to just have one more Christmas with old Ben Hake and the rest of the boys, but I didn't know as they'd moved on so far west. The old bush school is dying out. There was a smile in his eyes, but his bearded lips twitched a little. Things is changed. The old house is pretty much the same, and the old signs want touching up and painting just as bad as ever. And there's that old paling fence that me and Ben Hake and Jimmy Nowlett put up 20 years ago. What theme is coming through here?
Yeah.
Yes, Mike.
Australian mateship and sentimental people.
Well, that's naming characters, but what is happening to it? What's the theme?
Death.
Generation getting old.
Australian mateship is dying. What else?
He's dying.
Yep. So there's a sense of age and time. Is that right?
Yeah, because it's one more Christmas with them.
Yeah. What was the one?
Can I say that we're a sentimental culture?
You can say that. Is it true? What does it mean that we're a sentimental culture?
We value our past, like just say Aboriginal, like
yep.
just recently they're really...
traditions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Valuing culture. Your past doesn't necessarily make you sentimental, though. Sentimental is a specific word which means being overly emotional about
attachments
something.
Attachments.
Maybe
past.
This story is sentimental.
Yeah.
Maybe. I'm just thinking, is there any technology in this story that seems to be a key player in the development of events?
They've all moved west.
Sorry, Ian?
They've all moved west.
They've all moved west. The train, Joey, thank you. The train has come in the 1860s, 70s or 80s, and that's completely transformed the whole landscape. So this drifter really has kind of lost his bearings.
The port drivers are no longer used.
That's right. Okay, so we've covered a lot of themes. We've talked about what experience this stranger seems to embody. Now let's have a look at the film and let's see whether... Sorry?
I haven't written anything.
That's all right. It's all on the board. You can write that from there. Whether the language of drama in this film, the fact of illustrating it through a character on stage, whether that adds a dimension, or is it a perfect representation of the text on the page? Let's talk about the way that drama or dramatizing a story can impact on the nature of the story. So let me see if I can find this again.
Devotion of an elderly lady, Mrs. Byers, who had befriended him. She was to feed and care for him for the rest of his life. Despite his personal misfortunes, he continued writing, mainly poetry. But his use of alcohol as a refuge continued. And in 1908, he was admitted several times to a mental hospital for treatment. In the following years, Lawson's flame of creation was reduced to only a flicker. He used his verse to express his tangled emotions. He was tormented by regret, disappointment, and lost opportunities, and a longing to revisit the past. His writing became a mirror of himself.
Since you were here last?
15 years.
Indeed.
I suppose I don't remind you of anyone around here?
No. I can't can't say you do. Ah, well, I suppose I'll still find the Wilds living in the same place.
The Wilds? Well, no. The old man's dead too.
Oh, but where's Jim? He ain't dead.
No, he's married and settled down in Sydney.
Can you? Did you? I suppose you knew Mary. Mary Wild.
Mary. That was my wife's maiden name. Would you like to see her?
No. No, she mightn't remember me. Oh. Must be getting on.
I suppose you'll camp here over Christmas.
No. Nothing for me to stop here. I'll be getting out onto the track again. I did intend to spend Christmas here. In fact, I came a long way out of the road on purpose. Wanted to spend one last Christmas with Ben Hake and the rest of the boys. I didn't realise they'd gone so far west. Old bush school was dying out. Things has changed. The houses just the same. The signs need patching and painting just the same as ever. And that old paling fence that me and Ben Aiken, Jimmy Mallet built 20 years ago. I've tramped and travelled a long time since then. How long? Well, I'll be getting on. I'll be getting on the track again. It's cooler travelling at night.
Yeah, it's been pretty hot today.
Yeah, it was. So long.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Same to you. So long.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's have a... Sorry? Henry Lawson, did he sound like that? No, I think that he drew that character to represent, you know...
That wasn't Henry Lawson.
That wasn't Henry Lawson, no. That was one of his characters out of his story called Drifted Back. And what I want to do now is on the board, I want to write down all those things that the film added to the story. The way that the film, using cinematographic techniques, using dramatic techniques, the things it showed, the various elements it brought in to enhance the story, what are all those things that we talked last week about them being the extra components of the language of drama? So what are some of the things? Let's brainstorm.
The pause, the use of pause. You know, after he says that things is changing, and the other time he sort of doesn't want to acknowledge it's Christmas, and there's a sense of loneliness there.
Okay, so that's very good. So use of pause creates sense of loneliness. Very good. So pausing and the way that the lines are delivered, that's a whole dimension of drama that the director has to get out of his actors to make a certain feeling, a certain impression come through. Good. Anything else?
I think the way it was portrayed, both the director and the shopkeeper.
So when you say the way it was portrayed, are you talking about the way the characters were set up, the casting and the way they look,
yeah,
their dress?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think just and mainly the casting.
Yeah.
Maybe in my mind confirm my thoughts around Mary being his daughter.
Okay.
And the way he paused and that after the shopkeeper turned around and said that the old man Wild was dead.
Yep.
Maybe think.
So the casting,
sorry,
the looks.
I'm sorry about that. If no one else agrees.
Well, no.
That's just my thought.
Everybody doesn't have to agree with you. It still can be a valid thought that the casting, the looks, and the dress confirmed your thoughts about what was going on in the story, about whether this was his daughter or what have you. Good? Yes, Mike?
Seeing it visually created a mood and an atmosphere.
Okay, that's great. Visually created mood and atmosphere. That's fantastic. Now, can we look at what else created the mood and the atmosphere? I mean, you talk about visually, but what sort of visual elements created the mood and the atmosphere? That's part of the story, finding that his friends were gone. But what visually in the film, what visual components helped to create that atmosphere?
The shopkeeper's uniform was so crisp and, you know, presentable, when it's the reverse of the drifter who's...
Shopkeeper's uniform contrasting...
The drifter's, you know, comfortable, well-worn...
Well, also torn, yeah.
Yeah, well, on the torn arms.
Yep, that's right. So the part of that visual creation is the shopkeeper's uniform contrasting with the drifter's clothes.
The shopkeeper's actually pretty well fit and fairly portly. He's the sort of guy that worries about walking at night rather than sweating it out. As the drifter says, you know, it's better to cooler travelling at night.
Yep. So that's important, the way that he's cast, the shopkeeper is cast as a rather portly and well-fed person.
The old guy looks like he'd lived quite a lot.
Yep, good.
Old
guy.
The
shopkeeper's both did well in the
cast. Yeah. He's got a well-worn, lined face with the drifter. It's almost you can read his experience in his face.
Did the music in any way add to the qualities? We've got visual qualities. I wonder whether the music was part of the texture of the film. Did anybody notice the way the music sort of helped the mood? Melancholic music, yep, very good.
It was sort of Gaelic violin, you have it in a wake or a...
Yep, yeah. Derek?
I think the lighting was very important. They picked a nice cloudy day and...
The what, sorry?
The lighting.
The lighting, yep.
The time of day and the fact that it was a cloudy day gives very, very soft light.
Yep.
And it enhances the emotional mood.
Good. Creates.
And obviously the props or the little tennis suits in the shop and all that. Just like shops already, hungry to throw in.
I wonder too, just talking about the props and the canisters, in the language he talks about, can you give me a pound of nail rod, for example? I've never heard that word before. Did you used to buy nails like in a rod and then cut them up and make your own nails? Is that what you did? I think maybe that's what you did. You didn't buy individual nails. You bought something that you could make nails out of, maybe. And then a pound... He might have had an affair, that's right. That's the hidden part of the narrative. That's really good.
That's really what I thought.
Yeah.
It might be someone, that ex-girlfriend, that she's married now to the shopkeeper.
Right.
So why would...
Why would you like, yeah, good.
Yeah, but also what I like in the movie,
yep,
that, you know, in the props, is that they're in a shop, all right, and the... The shopkeeper... could have been like in the same space, and there's this counter between them.
That's a good...
It's
that's
like a divide.
That's a very good observation, yep. Yep. So the actual props themselves, the way the stage is set up, stage props, the counter is a divide. That's very good. So it's almost like the stage has been set up symbolically. And, you know, in any good play, the way that the director has created the stage, as when we went to see As You Like It, in As You Like It, you had this amazing thing coming, descending down with all these flowers hanging down. The streamers. And that, you know, really kind of gave a sense of the value of being in the forest, how the forest was something that was alive, it was vital, relationships were starting there. There was a real sense of joy, of spring. All that came through because of the prop, not because of the characters or because of what Shakespeare wrote. But the director added that in. And Lawson doesn't talk about the counter. He doesn't talk about the music. He doesn't talk about
That's what you would expect in a shop.
It's what you'd expect in a shop. It is what you'd expect in a shop, but the way it's dramatised, with the and picking up on Chris's point too, the big fat portly shopkeeper at the back looking really, really wealthy and really, you know, very self-confident, with the drifter on the other side of the counter looking very down at heel, all that kind of draws attention to the difference. It amplifies the theme. So we
like that.
You could say that the elements of non-linguistic elements of non-linguistic detail amplify the story's theme and mood. So when you're doing drama, all these extra things, you know, that you put on the stage or that you get the actors to do, or the way the actors are dressed, coming back to Thomas's point earlier, all these things amplify.
So it was interesting that he looked at the amplifier with the record gramophone when he came in, like, it's like, oh, what's this, you know?
That's
so
right.
You mentioned
that. That's right. That's another thing. That's right. He was immediately taken aback by the modernity of things in the actual shop itself.
Sort of links with his attitude towards the railway.
Links with his attitude to the railway, that's right. So
I think he's actually trying to get away from the whole thing to go back to a life that he can all live in. And he doesn't, I think you discussed it at the start, he doesn't like change.
That's right.
He doesn't want change. Change is something that scares him.
That's exactly right. So he's trying to get back to an old time. Now, just to pick up that theme for a minute, Greg, because that's a really important theme. Henry Lawson, I mean, you could ask yourself, whose side is Henry Lawson on in this story? Whose side do you think he's on?
It's actually Henry Lawson's story.
Yeah, I know, but these two characters there, of these two characters, whose side would you say Henry Lawson is on?
The drifter.
The drifter. Why would we say that? What leads you to think that he's sympathetic to the drifter?
Because he lived a life and he wanted to come back to a life that he lived.
Because the storeman didn't have much emotion where the drifter did.
That's good. So the storeman didn't have much emotion. We've already described him as being rather portly, well-fed and rather distant behind the counter. Whereas the drifter
displayed a lot of emotion.
And coming back to Greg's observation, it then leads one to think that maybe Henry Lawson himself, and this comes to Derek's point, maybe Henry Lawson himself values the past, values the time of mateship, values the time when there were bullet carts. And Henry Lawson himself, you know, is questioning the validity of all this new modern stuff coming in.
Watching it, I get a sense that the drifter was in his head a lot, reminiscing.
Yep. Drifter reminiscing.
That's the main thing with the story.
And I would just add a question there. If you are reminiscing, maybe you're not in your head a lot. Maybe you're in your feelings as well.
Yeah, looking at memories.
You know, you're feeling. Head is here, feeling is here. So the two things.
It'll bring up a memory or thought,
yep,
which is attached to an emotion.
An emotion, exactly, good. Yes, Jean, Jean?
I also think that like, it's like the drifter is grabbing at straws, you know, because like, he wants a sense of belonging, you know, like, and he's just, you know, like all of these people, he really wants to belong, you know, like, to be able to reconnect.
Of course.
Why did he want to make a woman?
Well, because maybe there's some bad history.
He seems to be out of place, that drifter.
Well, that's what a drifter is. A drifter is out of place.
Maybe
a drifter is drifting. Life has passed him by. But he's had a life.
Yeah, stating the obvious, is that right?
Yeah.
We're brainstorming.
We are brainstorming.
He's the one that Lawson gives to initiate most of the questions. Like, if you went through it, I don't have a line here.
Yeah.
He's asking most of the questions, he's generating the conversation.
He is.
Whereas the shopkeeper is more passive, obviously wants to get the sale, and in between he's questions about who's dead and alive.
Yeah.
He asks, well, that'll be nails and that'll be sugar, and he throws down the money, and the shopkeeper very carefully counts to make sure he's not, you know, getting his paid accurately. And then the guy just sort of walks off and said, I came here specifically, I came a long way out of my way.
That's right.
But he's not going to stay for Christmas.
That's right, not going to serve.
He was always asking about men, never about women.
He was always.
When the woman was mentioning.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I suppose you. And there was one, I suppose, from the shopman at the end. I can't remember what it was. I've been looking on the text here, I can't find it, but it struck me when I saw the film.
I suppose we'll be camping here for Christmas.
Yeah.
That's it. I suppose you'll be camping here for Christmas. The one suppose.
Just continue business.
That's right, just continue business. That's right.
It's in his best interest to ask that.
It is his best interest to ask.
Not,
that's right.
Not really, because at the end of the day, even if he was camping over Christmas, it's a sale.
Yeah.
And there's only one store.
Yeah.
There's only one place where you can go and buy anything, and that's the one general store in town.
That's right.
Like, you know, I can, off the top of my head, I can think of, on the way from Sydney to my hometown, I can think of 50 towns.
With one store.
With one store and one pub.
Yeah, right.
That you just go through, and
you'd
blink and you'd miss it.
That's right. That's exactly what Lawson says in that other story. You blink it, you'd miss it. Exactly that. You got a story you knew about this, I can see it. Perfect. Now listen, we've got... Yep.
I just thought that when you were looking at the thing from the film to the written, the very last line here it says, along the sunset track.
Yeah.
But in the film, he just said, I'm going to hit the track.
Yep.
And it was only the visual sunset that connected.
Okay. Very interesting.
Visual. So that's, he wasn't saying I'm going to hit the sunset track. So that wouldn't be a natural thing that you would say.
That's right.
Very
good. Good observation. So often the film director will take liberties with the text and will change the text slightly to create what he thinks is a better way of producing the story. John Bell, the Shakespeare there, they decided to present As You Like It in 19th century dress rather than in Shakespearean dress. So directors can do all sorts of things with their stories. Okay, now I'm just looking at the clock and what time we got left. I'd like to just wind this film to the end because it shows Henry Lawson's funeral. I think there's about
5 minutes.
5 minutes on there, is there? Okay, we'll have 5 minutes and then we've got 5 minutes left to talk about the film and talk about anything else and just make sure that the plans for next week are in place.
The Lawson of the 1890s did not surrender to the mellowness of age, but to confusion. His most prominent feature, his deep-set dark brown eyes, no longer glowed, but reflected the emptiness of the helpless. But he was still one of Australia's most popular and influential writers. In 1914, a movie based on one of his poems, Trooper Campbell, was produced by one of Australia's film pioneers, Raymond Longford. It was the story of an outback policeman who tracks down the wayward son of the woman he once loved. The boy had joined a gang of bushrangers. But the trooper successfully appealed to the better side of the outlaws to let the boy return home, thereby saving him from a life of crime. Other stage plays and movies based on his work followed. In 1916, through the influence of his friends, Lawson gained employment with the government, writing articles on an irrigation project. For a time, his health improved, and this was reflected in his writing. But by 1920, Henry Lawson was again admitted to hospital for alcoholism. His friends, who had been supporting him, had seen him reduced to begging in the streets, and began agitating for a government grant to save Lawson from further indignity. Much of this side of his life was kept from an adoring public who revered him. When mentally and physically up to it, he could be seen walking the streets of Sydney, a figure almost Chaplin-esque, with his hat, walking stick and distinctive limb, a legacy of his failed suicide attempt. He took great pleasure in the company of the working class and the poor, especially the street urchins. He understood their suffering. He knew it well. In 1921, he was again hospitalized, this time for a brain hemorrhage. He knew the end was near. On the 2nd of September, 1922, in a cottage at Abbotsford, Sydney, Henry Lawson penned his last lines, a nostalgic piece about his time in London, 20 years earlier. The manuscript indicates he was forced to stop by an uncontrollable shaking of the hand. Lawson's body was found beside his bed. He was 55 years old. The announcement of his death sent the nation into a state of grief. He was given a state funeral with full honours. Henry Lawson had risen his way into the hearts of countless Australians. He is still the towering giant of Australian literature. It's easy to show up the weakness of Lawson's nature and his work. But he deserves to be honoured for his genuine Australianism. Literary critic H.M. Green later wrote, "If we were set the impossible dream of finding some single book to represent Australia, it would have to be one of Lawson's. For an Australian to read him in another country is to breathe the air of home."
Okay, so that's Henry Lawson. Next week, those of you that have come in late, we are going to the State Library, and we have a meeting at the Shakespeare Room in the State Library at 2 o'clock. And the visit in the State Library in the Shakespeare Room will probably last for around about half an hour. And the reason we're going to the Shakespeare Room is we want to touch Shakespeare as best we can. And the Shakespeare Room was built in honour of Shakespeare, who was one of the most celebrated playwrights in the 19th century in Australia. And I think I might have told you already that one of the first plays that was produced in Australia in 1804 was Shakespeare's Henry IV. And Shakespeare's Henry IV is a play about the importance of the rebels and not the importance of those who've got power. Shakespeare was a rebel himself, and Falstaff, big fat Falstaff, who was a real rebel, is one of Shakespeare's great comic heroes. And that play was put on with a convict cast. So the convicts were kind of allying themselves with Shakespeare's own rebelliousness. Anyway, the Shakespeare Room has got a chair in it made out of a tree that was in Shakespeare's garden, and there's somebody there who's going to tell us all about the room and how it celebrates Shakespeare. And outside the library there is a big statue of Shakespeare with some of his major characters on it. So we're going to spend half an hour doing that, and then we're going to head across to the...
Sorry, Mark, so it's the Macquarie Street entry.
The Macquarie Street entry to the State Library. And go.
The side of the cat. The bronze cat.
Yes, it's the hospital there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's a pig there too, I think. Mm. And Francis is going to be here, leaving here at 1:30, walking down with whoever is here with her at 1:30. If you want to go to the State Library yourself, go straight there. If you're late and you're in time, if you're late and in time, in other words, if you get there about 2:05 or 2:10. For you, Tibby, this is, go straight to the Shakespeare Room. Ask, where's the Shakespeare Room? And you'll find us in there. If you come after about 2:30, then don't bother coming to the library. Go straight to the Art Gallery and wait for us on the steps of the New South Wales Art Gallery. Now, if you go into Leo, I did this before, I won't do it again now. If you go into Leo, into the announcements, the very top thing, I've got a link in there, a link that shows you how to get to the art gallery, how to get to the State Library. Why are we going to the art gallery?
Henry Lawson.
Sorry?
Isn't it for Henry Lawson?
We're going to kneel down in front of Henry Lawson's painting. And we're going to kneel there and reflect for 1 hour.
So get in touch with your country.
That's it. Now the real reason we're going there.
Good music, come and see me.
That's it. The real reason we're going there is because I want to show you how knowing something about looking at art can help us in our understanding of literature. That's the main point of it. And the other thing is that up in Leo, there is a place where you can drop your essays into a box. It says prose assignment number 2. If you go into announcements and click on there, I've actually given you a link in there as well. So if they've got any problems with that, I'm going to be hanging around here for a while. I'm actually seeing one of the students from a year ago or so over in that coffee shop shortly, if he's there. And I'll come back if necessary. And I'll look
at
what's...
Coffee shop.
Sorry?
You picked the wrong coffee shop.
Picked the wrong one, did we?
Yeah.
It was his idea. No? Not a good one. Not a good idea. All right.
The tile used to be pretty good. Though.
Is
eight,
it?
All right. Bucks.
So, any questions? Everything clear? And then the week after that, when we come back, we're starting serious work on As You Like It. Okay? Good. Thank you all. 4 o'clock now. And please make use of the computers. Make use of my being here, Rosanna's being here, etc. Yep, you go. It's fine. That's it.
Would it be better with the light on?
No, it's fine. That's it.
Non-linguistic.
Yeah, I saw you like that.
The wrong noun when I said that life had passed him by. I think time has passed him by.
Time has passed him by. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Not life. Good. That's very good. And you know what? You're still being recorded.